It's Saturday, March 2nd, 2019. This is Room in the Trees,
a podcast about perfection and not perfection, and good and great, and baking and avoiding and doing it, and chicken. Room in the Trees is hosted by Trent Reynolds and me, Sabrina Ward Harrison. Show notes and links can be found at roominthetrees.com. And if you want to be a Patreon and support us, you can go to patreon.com/room.
And please, 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 please go to iTunes and leave us a review. We'd love it if you'd leave us a 5-star review. It helps us to reach a wider audience, and that's probably one of the best ways that you can help us spread the word, spread the podcast.
Just really grateful for the ones. They've been so wonderful and meaningful to read. Mm-hmm. Love hearing about.
Are you, do you have some snacks there? I heard a little crinkling.
I don't have any snacks right here, but I did cook. I did.
Don't tell me. did you throw a little loin? Little loin on the Barbie?
I did a double.
Double loin.
Yeah, I saw the. I was like, I'm all over. I'm done. And then I saw that they were on sale.
Those sales get you every time.
So I got two more, and I'm trying them with smoked paprika.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was visiting my friend Vanessa this weekend, and her husband Bob was all about the pork tenderloin on the Instapot. So I have an Instapot, and I'm really excited to learn more about what I can do in the Instapot.
That's fantastic. We are big Instapotters.
Are you?
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say we. Laura does a lot in the Instapot, but she does broth.
Yeah.
For just good for her digestive system. And Instapot's good for making broth. When you were going through the chicken binge.
Yeah,
it was a year, right? It was a year of chicken. A couple years of chicken. So are you feeling like the pork loin has the stay power, like chicken? No.
I don't think it's consistently. But chicken, I love chicken, but it has to be chicken breast. I never feel I can get enough meat in the other
regions. no chicken loin for
you. This is going to be like a 10-part series.
I wanted to share a little snack with you.
Yes, please. Please.
I purposefully held on to the wrapper after eating it this afternoon because I wanted to tell you about it, and I lost the wrapper, but I found it again online. This snack is called Lox Sesame Snaps. So Lox is LOUCKS. I don't know if I told you about these before, because I've been enjoying them for years.
No, but I had them. I loved Sesame Snaps when I was a little girl.
When I was a kid, we would go out on Halloween, get all the candy. And I remember getting the little sesame blocks.
Yeah.
You know, like they're kind of the size of a Lego, or close, maybe a little bit longer. And I did not like them when I was a kid. I remember thinking, okay, you know, there's the candy that's kind of the throwaway candy.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, Almond Joy, no thanks. When I'm an adult, I enjoy me some Almond Joy. But these sesame blocks, I just remembered not liking them at all. So fast forward, a couple decades, and I see Lox Sesame Snaps in 7-Eleven. They're conveniently located right next to the cash register. So I threw it out there.
Yeah.
And I love these things. Love them.
Yeah.
They're so good. And they have chocolate versions. And chocolate versions are really solid. I don't think that's something.
Is it like a band of chocolate along the bottom of it?
They're stripes, I believe. Stripes of chocolate.
Delicious.
Yes. Let me see. There's a dark chocolate sesame snaps, but I don't think you would want to. Like, I could eat the regular sesame snaps all the time.
Yeah.
The chocolate sesame snaps, they're a little bit, they're every once in a while.
Yeah.
Which brings us to desert food. Or desert island food? Not desert food. Desert island food? Have we talked about that before?
No.
So it seems like I was going to go here earlier in our conversation, but I was having a little hard time getting it out. But it seems like chicken is one of your desert foods, chicken breasts. Like that's something that you could take to a desert island and be content with for, you know, indefinitely for the rest of your life. Is that a fair assessment? It's a desert island food?
Yeah, but like as a solid protein, like, yes, I could eat, yes.
So, I mean, if you only had a limited number of foods available to you.
Right.
I'm saying exactly. Like this is something that's, you know, good food. You always like it and it doesn't wear out easily. Yeah.
What are yours?
Well, sesame snaps. I think I could go on sesame snaps.
Oh, I mean, if we're talking about just delicious, I mean, chicken I just eat because it's like just some protein and it's like not that bad for you, but like a yummy thing. That's a whole, I could eat sesame snaps for a long time. I love those. They're sticky and kind of dangerous for your teeth.
Yes. You like the teeth danger. Don't you? I mean, you're a risky.
I played. I played Loose and Wild with my teeth.
Oh, I love the image of Loose and Wild teeth.
I just watched our beautiful, our decisive action video film piece. It's just so, I'm so excited for people to watch it. It's so much fun to see.
Yeah, it really is.
It's coming, guys. It's
so close.
We did the final pass through today, I think.
Yeah. Did you watch this most recent version? And it seemed like we were really close.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Kate's done a great job.
So what are we talking about today?
Well, we got a question from Elise Ash, who is went on my Italy retreat back in 2000.
Okay.
And she had a question I posted on Instagram stories for people to ask any questions that they want us maybe to talk about. And so her question was, I need to pull it up. Done is more important than perfect versus good is the enemy of great.
Right.
So that's interesting. Versus good is the enemy of great.
Right.
Hmm.
The question is, which is a more valid approach to art making, or which is a more practical approach, or which is the, I mean, is it, are we saying which is right and which is wrong? Or, because I can see instances where, I mean, obviously they're both sayings that have been,
maybe they apply in different ways. yeah,
both.
You could argue both sides.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's argue both sides.
Okay. So I'll talk about, for me, in regards to done versus perfect, and perfect can be an enemy of getting stuff done and finished and complete. And so, for example, I've been reflecting a lot as I'm preparing to teach about creating your own book. You know, I've been reflecting on the limitation aspect of what was upon me when I made Spilling Open, and how if I had had 5 years to make it, I don't think it would have been as an effective of a book. I don't think it would have been as honest of a book. I think it would have been highly edited. I think it would have been, it wouldn't have the vitality to it.
Right.
And I think that that's a critical thing to take into consideration when working on certain types of projects. For example, a book that I think that is a longer form piece that's sequential. And so what I'm really, those limitations on just do it. Just, it's the act of making it, and that there can be more than one. There can always be revisions, but you don't really know, who are we to judge if it's good enough or not. And I think that when we think that we're the ones who can judge if something's good or bad, or a page is good or is good or not, we can't really call that shot. You know, I think certain pages I wouldn't have published because I thought they weren't that great of spreads. They weren't as strong of spreads in my mind, but they happened to, looking back, contain some of the words, the writing that seems to be most resonant with people.
Right.
So that's something I really feel was important. to adapt into the limitations, to get something done.
Yeah. So the whole idea of perfection, something being perfect, points to, our sense of expectation of what the art ought to be or needs to be, or what even perfection is, right? There's a lot built into that, and part of the difficulty of art is that it's never been done before, right? What you're making is, something that you're bringing something into the world that hasn't been in the world before.
Right.
So what you're trying to do is you're trying to match this internal expectation and image to this thing that's becoming in the real world, right? That you're putting together. So there is often that tension of like something coming out that's not really what you had in your mind, right?
Yeah.
And it's so hard to, because it's not a direct comparison. You're taking something that's very fleeting and abstract in your head, these ideas and feelings and emotions, and trying to translate that into a physical object or an image. And I think you're always going to have that kind of letdown sometimes it can be the opposite. Sometimes it can be more transcendent than even exists in your imagination or in your feelings, I think. I don't know. The whole idea of your artwork not being done until it's perfect, points more at the, like, a personality trait.
Yeah.
you know what I mean? It's a need for control. It's a need to be able to say, okay, this matches what I had wanted for it. And that gets me to another thing that we have talked about before that I think is part of this discussion, and that is somewhere along the line, somebody told me that creating art is more like a conversation than it is willing something into existence. Mm, right? Mm-hmm. That it's a process of almost growing something. It's you do something, and then you have to be willing to stop and listen and perceive what the thing you're creating needs or wants. And thinking of it as more of an interaction or a dialogue than putting your will into this thing that, and then having it come, become what you had envisioned. I think it kind of relieves you from that responsibility of having to match it exactly and control it and, fit it to this expectation that you went in with, because it's never going to be that. Just like if you have a kid, the kid's never going to be exactly what you expected. And that's both a terrifying thing and disappointing thing and a wonderful, amazing thing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know, when I came upon, and I don't remember who taught me that, but, when I came upon that idea though, I remember feeling like, wow, that relieves me from some of this pressure I feel to try to live my life and learn skills so that I could match this thing in my head. Exactly. I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm articulating that very well.
Absolutely.
But the other thing about that is that I was going to say something about having kids.
Like parenting?
Yeah. And you've talked about your books in a similar way of them being kind of like your children. Mm-hmm. It's like, you never feel like it's completely done, the job, and you always wonder, well, I could have done things slightly differently and maybe things would have turned out, better or worse, who knows? But at the end of the day, this thing is what it is,
and it's
got its own existence in the world, and it's got its own relationship to you, and it's got its own relationship to the larger audience of people that see it. And to a certain degree, you've got to let it go. And that's the thing, though, is some people never can let it go. Like, I always feel this need whenever I go to a house that I know I have a painting in, that I've given a painting or made a painting. I always have to go to that painting and just kind of check in on it.
And just sit
there with it for a little, like, it's almost as if I don't even have to look at the painting. I just kind of want to be there with it for a little bit.
Yeah.
It has this kind of presence and anyway, and I don't think that's like narcissistic. I think there is something too, just like having a kid, it's like, it's this thing that you participated in.
Yeah.
Poured yourself into.
Mm-hmm. I got shivers kind of thinking about how we have, like, I know I've thought this about before, but that concept of we have our relation to it, but then other people have their own equal relationship to it as well, which is just so, you know, it's amazing right. to think about. Like, there are going to be people who are so influenced and affected by each of your children, and they're going to have effects on their lives, other mm-hmm. people's lives.
Yeah, I think it's a good metaphor. And I think
you
might have some habits or tendencies that are not healthy for your own artwork. Just right. like when you're a parent, you know, maybe you have some bad, you know, instruction, bad programming from when you were raised or whatever, mm-hmm. or things that you picked up along the way. And it's always helpful to have friends and family around you to look at what you're doing and say, you need to back off. Right. I don't know. Yeah, sometimes, you know, or editors in your case, you know, or there are people who you trust and mentors and people that surround you, that care about you and care about your work and you feel like really gets you to come in every once in a while and recognize the patterns of your behavior. Cause like I'm thinking of, I'll just give a specific example. Like, Laura has, you know, she'll come in when I'm painting or working on something. This has happened several times on commissions where there's that kind of like wanting to please the person you're making the painting for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she'll come in, she'll, you know, say, oh, it's done. It's great. And I'll be like, no, it's not quite right yet. And then I end up overworking and it kind of gets stale. Right.
Yeah.
And she's seen that habit enough times and knows me well enough to be able to come in and say, it's done. And if you keep on going, you're going to ruin it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if we get to that point, hopefully I've got the sense to pay attention to that. And, you know, at least take a night to sleep and come back to it with fresh eyes and or turn it around for a couple of days and, you know, try to get some perspective. But I think that's another, you know, place where the metaphor of raising children and creating art can kind of.
I was thinking about how, like, the thing about perfect and good and perfect and great. And it's funny to live like your parents are out of town.
What does that look like?
It just feels like, you know, there's no one that's going to be coming in and judging the situation right now, but there may be. It's not, you know, there may be someone that comes over, but I'm just sitting here the way it's like could be a still life. It's so chaotic and sort of haphazard, but it's just what's happening. And I just find myself in these I don't know. I guess the whole thing of handmade life is just very apropos and appropriate for my life. I can't really. So I guess the feeling of perfect, like there's times in my life when I've had, you know, fancier, like where I live right now feels very modest, but it's so sweet and cozy and wonderful. Other times I've spent a lot of time around, I've paid a lot of money for my rent and I've, spent a lot of time and I love decorating and making something really magical and wonderful, but I've spent a lot of time just in that a little more in that state than actually just kind of living through the space. Like, all right, this is what, whatever it's, this is good. I'm cozy. I'm comfortable. This is working. I'm not sure if I'm able to articulate this very well, but maybe it's sort of like with you and when kids are, you know, the kids are all around, like there's a certain amount of maybe Laura's experience, like there's toys everywhere. Like you sort of go, like I'm kind of halfway moved into my studio. So I've just kind of got piles in the living room and like everything's a little like, wow, this looks, if I was to leave this place and never come back, this would be an interesting place to come into right now.
Well, can we say that I don't know if we've mentioned that you just moved into a new studio space, right?
Yes, I moved into a new studio space. I'm in the process of moving into it.
That is really exciting.
Really great. I'm renting it through July, and then I can either take over the lease or I can or I could rent somewhere else, but I love it. It's right downtown. It's a block from the Capitol and it has a cafe downstairs and great restaurants and beautiful Southern light. And I'm so grateful. That's a wonderful, awesome. Wonderful woman. Yeah, wonderful woman reached out to me about, she's a photographer and she just is not, you know, she's not, it's a studio within a studio. So my intern Megan and I are just kicking serious butt. And it's just great. Just we've been jerry-rigging our locations as we go. She's it's just been fun working with her because she came into the internship having knowing nothing about my work and applying through the university, focusing on consumers' experience. So and studying happiness, consumer happiness, and so she's coming in from the technology side and the consumers. Sort of study side. So wow. she's really interested in what we're doing. So,
well, I'm excited for you. I love the new spaces. It's always, I don't know. It's always exciting. I've been, I think I sent you some pictures of this, the little sketches yes. that I've been doing.
Yeah. Pretty, they're more pretty, than sketches.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I've been,
talk about them.
Well, I started with just a big sheet of paper, and I dumped a bunch of black resin on it, and dripped it around and mushed it around a little bit, and then I cut that big sheet of paper up into smaller pieces of paper, about 5x7.
Okay.
And it's like watercolor, cold press, you know, some thicker paper, and then I started painting on them with acrylic and ink and paint pens. And then, and they were just these kind of abstractions. And then I started lasering, engraving into them these patterns. So there's an iPad app that will essentially just repeat what you're drawing. So I took this iPad app and did little scribbles that turned into these pretty awesome patterns. And then I engraved those patterns onto these drawings. And the cool thing is that when you engrave it, the laser will just take off like, you know, like half a millimeter of material. So it starts to reveal the previous layers, you know? Anyway, I just was so delighted with how that was looking.
What was the app?
One app is called Symmetry Pad, SymmetryPad. Pad. Mm-hmm. That's the one that I've been using. There's a couple others that are pretty good too. One's called Kaleido Paint and Kaleido Curve. But the Symmetry Pad app is the one that I've been messing around with. Anyway, super cool. It's really easy just to come up with these patterns and then just airdrop them to my laptop and then, you know, use Photoshop to engrave them. And it's like, it's pretty like a seamless process, you know, to get it done. And
just for people who don't know, you're doing this as 3D engraving,
right? So it's laser engraving. So
laser engraving,
right? And then I'll go back with another more layers of resin and sanding and paper, and you know, I've just been kind of trying to push the materials.
Really cool stuff.
It is. It's really cool. I love the kind of the geometric precision next to the really gushy, shiny, you know, resin.
What gave you the idea to just drop the black resin on?
I actually think I just had a bunch of extra resin that I needed to do something with, and I decided to drip it all over this piece of paper. I didn't really know what I was going to do with it. And then the idea came to just cut it up into a bunch of small pieces. There's a lot of this stuff. I'm just kind of, I'm trying not to think too much about it as I go, you know, just trying new things. Oh, we had one more, the other saying, the perfect.
Oh.
So we talked about the first one already, which was
done versus perfect.
Done versus perfect.
Now, good is the enemy of great.
To which I would again ask that statement has a lot of assumptions built into it. You know, one, that you know what greatness is.
Right.
You know, who's going to be the judge of that? And rarely is an artist like super stoked about what they do. right off the bat. You know, like I think most of us have some pretty deep reservations. Maybe I'm misspeaking, but you know, maybe that's just a personality thing too, now that I think of it. But who's deciding what perfection is? Who's deciding what greatness is? And I don't know. I think fundamentally that statement, while I appreciate its sentiment and understand it and can see how it applies in certain instances, it does not jive at all with my personality and what art does and means, does for me and means to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, I think there's a certain personality that would be a very fruitful way of approaching life, but it does not resonate with me at all. What do you think?
Okay. So the way I'm interpreting it is when I start thinking about good and then I think great. So good. All right. I put a good amount of effort into it and then great. Like I friggin' did it. He went all the way. Like, there's a good trip, and then there's a great trip.
Oh.
So there's a good life, and there's a great life.
Oh, I love that.
So
Tony the Tiger.
Yeah, totally Tony the Tiger. So it feels like, even, you know, it makes you think of a design. As designs, probably, you know, you could solve it like this, or you could really, you know, I don't think it's about working harder. It's working smarter and being, it's to me, it feels like it's applied, you know, to think of the physically fit, you know, your capacity, if you're strong and healthy, what you can achieve, I mean, or overcome, or, you know, push through, versus kind of a limp, unhealthy version of self. But so I think there's something to, when I hear those words, because I think for me, the difference between great and perfect is very different. Perfect is something that is not, you know, in a way we're all secretly perfect, but then also a way we're all completely flawed, right? Always. And we're never supposed to be perfect. But then there's another way that we've been created. If we think of it the way we think of it, you know, like nature and everything is somehow perfect, just like it is. But then when you think of good and great, great to me feels like it's more of an adjective or verb. Sorry, it's a verb of action. So like, do I want to make a good course? No, I want to make a freaking great course. So.
But do you want to make a perfect course?
No.
So it seems like in your case, well, what you're saying, like, great is that's the optimal, right? That's the,
yeah, exactly.
And that's the desired outcome. It's not perfection that.
No, it's not desired. Interesting if it's perfect.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
So it sounds like both you and I would probably, not be altogether interested in perfection.
No. And I think that's why, like, the people that get held up by thinking they can't do it because they don't have the perfect, like you're saying, the perfect equipment or the perfect space, or you just do it anyway.
I think we also live in a day and in a time when, my kids are home. I'm in the garage right now. Do you hear them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wild animals out there. Yeah.
Things are not going well for Laura right now.
Oh no. And maybe, did you have something to say about parenting? Is it, or?
No, but I do have strong feelings about that, the like waiting until the perfect scenario or circumstances.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that probably also applies to the idea of a perfect product. You know, like waiting till it's absolutely right before you show it to people, or waiting until you've got the right skill level to be able to show to people, or be a real artist, or be
right.
You know, whatever. All of this is just stuff and expectations that you've built up over a lifetime and don't really have as much gravity and foundation that you're giving them. You know, there's just your own perception and thought. You can let go of that and just you know, enjoy. Oh, making a project. But I was going to say, this is what I was thinking about earlier, mm-hmm. is that I think we live in a day and age when life is moving so fast and it's so fragmented that, you know, I can imagine the time when artists had, you know, a lifestyle that could permit them to have more psychological space and more just distance and peace to be able to really pursue perfection. But I think most of us in this day and age, life is so fast paced and noisy that I don't know if it's just we're in a situation right now that's conducive to, you know, that mentality of seeking perfection. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't think people find comfort in perfection.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in, you know, we're drawn to things like reality television because it's reality, not versus something polished. I mean, it's all been, you know, change and not totally obviously real,
right.
But there's a sense of we want the documentary versus we want the behind the scenes. We want the how it was made, you know, thing.
But there are, what would you say is a perfect, is there a perfect artwork or painting or?
I think music, there's perfection in music. There's a few perfect, I think it's like U2, I'm like, yeah, there's some pretty perfect songs out there.
Mm. Well, I would wonder if people have resonated with your books in a way that they would, you know, call them perfect. No, I'm serious. I think that's the thing is like, what is perfection? It's going, it serves a purpose and it resonates in a way that was, you know, maybe for a certain person, you know, what they needed in a moment, you know, so it was like the perfect and the missing piece that they needed or the key to some kind of progress that they had or to overcome some obstacle that they've been wanting to for a long time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, it's such an elusive thing. So don't let these kind of notions and false expectations keep you from making and showing your work, right? That's kind of the important part, I'd say. There is a perfect painting though. It's in Amsterdam, Vermeer's Milkmaid. The subject matter it's fine.
Oh, like, yes.
Milkmaid is lovely, but you look at this painting and it is just so well crafted. The way that like each brushstroke, the colors, everything is so perfectly and intentionally placed. I mean, I saw that up close and it was just, I was like, oh, he did it. He made a perfect painting.
I'm looking at it right now. The color balance.
What you can't appreciate, I guess, from not getting up close to it is there's on the bread, there's like little sesame seeds. And there's actually a texture there in the paint. There's like little raised areas. So with Monet, you know, he just uses a ton of paint everywhere, right? There's not very much discrimination in how he's applying texture sometimes. Sometimes it gets to be a bit much. Whereas in these, like there's the way he's actually using that surface and the quality of the paint, you know, the thickness of the paint, how it's applied, the direction of brush strokes, et cetera, et cetera. Like there's this depth. I don't know. There's just so many things about it that he just nailed it. You know,
because I would think I'm looking at it's cool. You can there's a link here that it has the must be an extremely high res version of it. It's a Wikipedia image, and so I'm just looking at the sesame seeds on the. I mean, I'll send you the link to it, but it'd be cool to put in the show notes for people that want to see it really, really up close. It's extremely high resolution.
Cool.
But then I could think of a Rauschenberg and think, well, there's a certain Rauschenberg painting that I think is, you know, perfection.
Yeah. And I imagine both artists probably were not attempting, maybe they were attempting to make the perfect painting, but that probably wasn't like top on their priority list.
Mm-mm. You believe it in the future. 1658, he painted that. All right.
Well, I think we're there.
Good combo. Yeah. Great conversation. And folks, let us know what else you, what questions you have for us. I'm excited to go back to, I decided to go on this quick whirlwind adventure to the West Coast. I haven't been back to Berkeley where I wrote Spilling Open in like a decade. And even then I was there for like a day or two. So I'm going back. I just got myself an Airbnb.
Awesome.
By where I used to live, and I'm going to see people, but I really, and I'm going to do Sam Lamott's Hello Human podcast, and I'm going to also, yeah, anyway, I've got this, but I'm so excited just to wander the streets where I used to live and go up into the hills in perspective where I would sit under the eucalyptus trees and the roots, and just so looking forward to that.
That's awesome.
Great combo. Again, covered a lot of ground.
A lot of ground. Join us next week. I don't know. What is it?
Where we'll be talking more.
Talking more. We should do more talking. And now I think don't have a good week.
Have a great week!
There you go.